is a Cincinnati edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The COVID-19 pandemic has brought to the world more than just a health crisis. There is a significant economic toll and other issues at play. One is an increase in domestic violence cases directly tied to our stay-at-home orders. Locally, the organization Women Helping Women reports an increase of 30% in calls to its hotline. Executive Director Kristen Shrimplin joined me earlier for this conversation. Kristen Shrimplin is the president and CEO of Women Helping Women. Kristen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
It seems like ages ago, March, April, when this pandemic first started, but it seemed like right off the bat, there was concern raised in national media outlets like the New York Times and elsewhere that we need to be on the lookout for rises in cases of domestic abuse. Have you seen evidence of that locally?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, we saw that pretty much right out the gate. So if we take ourselves back to March, which does seem like a long time ago, we can look at differences that were happening in the beginning of March and then differences that we started seeing at the end of March. And it really centered around, we had this new epidemic back then, right? And so we all had a lot of questions. But when our state went into a shelter-in-place order, that changed the landscape for so many survivors. Because imagine before, you're experiencing gender-based violence. A public health massive pandemic hits. All the systems get compromised. Any system you interacted with, whether that's law enforcement, hospital systems, whether that's your workplace and you're able to leave your home and go to work, right? Whether that's sending your kids to school and they can get a bit of a reprieve from what they're being exposed to at home. All of those systems got hugely compromised. Then we go into a shelter and shelter in place order. You're now at home stuck with that person who's made a choice to abuse you, and you can't get out and get access to your systems of support. So we saw a huge uptick. And it was interesting, not only an uptick in survivors reaching out, we then saw with the shelter-in-place order, things started to go down in the amount of time that people could talk to us on the phone.
What do you mean by that?
So we run a 24-hour hotline. And what we saw was, and so we're able to chart on that hotline, how many calls we get, how many survivors we deal with, and then how long are we on the phone with them and the average duration on the phone. And then the context of, the themes of why they're calling and how we're responding. What we realized as we started living more in the state of Ohio under the shelter in place, which we support, was the right decision for a pandemic, but it was a difficult decision. For survivors, they couldn't get privacy in their home. They couldn't make that phone call to a hotline and rest assured that they weren't being overheard. It created even more situations of increased danger for them. Because the number one thing you're not supposed to do if you're a survivor and you're trying to get through to the next day, you're not supposed to tell anyone. You're not supposed to ask for help. You're not supposed to reach out. And so, we started noticing that people, when they called, couldn't talk as long. We started noticing what they told us when they were on the call. They were very concerned about being overheard. And then we started getting really concerned around the economic piece, because as we rolled into the end of March and beginning of April, survivors that we serve were already living in extreme poverty. So I want to be super clear. Gender-based violence impacts every social, economic, demographic, every single one. However, our agency just tends to provide, because we're free and we're confidential and we're trusted, about 90% of our survivors are under 200% poverty. 75% of our survivors have no income or $10,000 annual income. So then we started getting really concerned. The calls were getting shorter. Abuser was in the home. They didn't feel safe to reach out. And they couldn't dedicate as many phone minutes to make a call to a hotline because of this huge economic impact of all of the people in our region, let alone the country, who lost their jobs.
And we're talking with Kristen Shrimplin. She's president and CEO of Women Helping Women. Kristen, this just sounds like a perfect storm for disaster for the women that you help. So What was the response from your organization? I imagine that this was a pretty quick pivot you had to pursue.
Absolutely. It was a huge pivot. And, you know, so here we are in July, so I can look back at what we did in March and April, and it does feel like eons ago. But what I'm really grateful to the team at Women Helping Women is that it's already in our nature to pivot, right? We're a crisis intervention response agency. So crisis is our, so to speak, our bread and butter. That's the whole reason we're in existence. So we don't get too thrown off by crisis. It's what we do and how we respond to it. So we immediately, when we started noticing this really strange and quickly emerging trend with the calls and the nature of the calls and the short time frame on the calls and increased danger on the calls and people not having the economic means to make the calls, I kind of compare it to we built an airplane in midair during a storm. So we decided to launch a new, and I think we did it in early April. We built and launched a new service mechanism, a text chat line, so that people could, you know, one, you can text or chat, you're not going to be overheard. So it was an increased safety measure for our survivors. And two, with text chat rates, you know, from the economic lens, that made it easier people with their phone plans with the survivors we serve. And when I say we did that like an airplane up in the air during a storm, something that typically would take, we figured about 45 business days, you know, planning, design, training, implementation, call to action, let the community know. We did within, I think it was 8 or 10 business days. And we did it at the time where we didn't have the funding for it. We just believed this is too important not to do. We've been wanting to do it for a while. Now was the time. We didn't have the funding base, so we dipped into our own savings. And then the community was fantastic. Community partners like the Fifth Third Foundation stepped forward. The COVID-19 Regional Relief Fund stepped forward. People came forward and said, you know what? We see what you're doing. We're going to support that. And so I would say that is a silver lining. You talked about the perfect storm. If I'm really honest right now, it feels like a tsunami. It's gotten worse. But the silver lining in that is I do strongly feel that collaboration and community support has just come forward so much in all the movements, whether it's the COVID-19 response movement, whether it's the gender-based violence response movement, or whether it's addressing right this huge other public health epidemic of racism. Everything's coming together in a huge tsunami, but I do feel like there's more support.
And we're talking with Kristen Shrimplin, president and CEO of Women Helping Women. And we're discussing domestic abuse during the pandemic as people are staying home together more than they might have previously. And Kristen, I'm wondering, I understand that there are economic constraints affecting the women that you help. I'm wondering if the financial constraints that some people are feeling, perhaps for the first time, at least in a long time, have you gotten a lot of calls from people who have experienced this for the first time?
Absolutely. So that's part of the heartbreaking piece of what's happening. It feels like the ground beneath so many people's feet in this region and frankly across the nation and frankly across the globe. Because we know from looking at global statistics, we knew what was coming to Cincinnati. We knew there was going. When we looked at China, Spain, France, when we then looked at Seattle, Washington, where COVID first kind of you know, we started getting data. I mean, that seems like forever ago, right? When things first went to Washington, the state of Washington, we were seeing what the data came in, that there's going to be a 20% spike in domestic violence. So not only, and then we knew that was going to come to our region. So not only were we already dealing with the survivors we serve, so our agency, we serve four counties. We serve the most survivors in the region. Last year, it was a little over 8,600 survivors, unique survivors, so what we call, like, unduplicated. And typically, a lot of those survivors, this was within, you know, kind of the way they grew up. They've been exposed to this. That was a lot of the story of generational transmission of violence. That was in their story. Here now, it feels like the ground is breaking beneath so many people's feet, like to your point, where they may not have experienced physical violence before from someone they trusted and loved. Maybe there were some patterns of emotional or verbal, but it hadn't gone to physical, it hadn't gone to sexual violence. And yeah, absolutely. We are seeing survivors who have not experienced that are experiencing that. And I will not say that the economy is a root cause, but it absolutely is a contributing cause. So when you have stress in the home and it rises to the level of toxic stress and all the things are happening in that home, massive job loss, massive fears and anxiety of contracting a virus that has been shown to significantly truly harm people and their health, and there are rates that are alarming even in our state. We're on red alert in this county, and we're seeing more and more infections, and people are dying.
Kristen, you talked about
the level of.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to jump in and say that you talked a little bit about some of the community partners who stepped up to help you in this pivot and in this growing need, the response to this growing need. I'm wondering what this period, this historic period that we're all experiencing together, what you think it's done to the ability to talk about this more broadly?
Absolutely. So what our agency has always said is gender-based violence is a public health epidemic, period. Therefore, it requires a public health solution. We've been saying that for years and years and years. And I think the general public would kind of scratch their head and be like, I'm not really sure I understand what you mean by public health epidemic. And we say, oh, okay, well, it's simple. You know, one out of three women experience this in their lifetime. One out of four girls before the age of 18 experience sexual assault. And it also impacts men and boys. So when we look at intimate partner violence, sexual violence, it is happening at high rates. Therefore, it is a public health epidemic. But we didn't have the language in our region for that. Unfortunately, here comes COVID-19. The general public gets really good then at turning on their news, seeing how things are impacting the workplace and the school systems. You know, if we want to go grab a beer at a brewery, we are suddenly seeing how things are impacting our everyday life of where we work, live, and play, and people are using the term pandemic, and that's even like the supercharged public health epidemic. So I think what it's done, it's given the general person much more language to understand how do we determine health and wellness and vitality. And so now we're able to say, don't you see, gender-based violence has always been a public health epidemic. You have a better understanding now of what that means, of how that impacts people's family structures, workplace structures, community structures. And it's been fantastic in that, not that these elements exist, but when you talk about community partners, so our agency absolutely collaborates with the health collaboratives, right, with the hospital systems. We absolutely collaborate with the chamber and their restart plans. We absolutely collaborate with the social service and the systems and the policymakers, because people and systems are really having a better framework. Donors, philanthropists are very cued in. You know, and the great work that's been done with the COVID-19 relief fund, where I forget how many massive philanthropists came together, but like over 28 entities, I believe. So everyone's having a much better language and then tools of how do we collectively as a region address from start to finish the health and vitality. So I am grateful that we are able to talk about gender-based violence that way, and that I feel more people and policymakers and people with positional power are understanding that.
We're talking with Kristen Shrimplin. She is president and CEO of Women Helping Women. And before we let you go, Kristen, I want to talk about some of the other programs that you do. I know that you do mm-hmm. a lot of work with corporate entities and businesses that, and to help them yep. be prepared to address these types of issues. You work on campuses. How have these programs transitioned during this pandemic, if at all?
Absolutely. I mean, all of our programs have had to pivot. So early on in March is when we saw our campuses, right? And then all of our public schools, quote unquote, shut down. So our campus-based advocacy had to look different. We have advocates who are based at University of Cincinnati, and they're based at Miami University. Because we've had real concerns, just like many regions and states have with the levels of sexual assault on college campuses. So as those closed down, we still have survivors who had experienced victimization and needed support. So I am grateful we've been able to do a few things through technology. We quickly pivoted. Our agency would do, for instance, 23 support groups in the community, like run out of our agency, either at our agency or we would be on college campuses, or we would be in churches, we would be in rehab centers, we would be in the criminal justice system. We had to pull all those. So we put those two online, and those have done really well. So we've been able to stay with our students on campuses through our support groups in secure, private, virtual rooms. With our corporate response, we run a program called Work Strong. And even entities like, Forbes magazine had covered it, and we, have investment with social venture partners for it. And we were just really getting ready to lift off in many spaces and working with corporate workforce around policies, trainings, and support to employees experiencing gender-based violence. And so we've had to reconfigure that while a lot of us went remote. But we have extreme concerns. Again, what do we know? People who are stuck at home in abusive relationships, the outcomes are increasing for their danger. And the outcomes for their areas of support, those outlets are decreasing. So we flip that to online and virtual and digital as well. We've been very concerned. We run prevention programming, so we partner with over 20 middle schools and high schools in the region. All of those schools really struggled, had to shut down. They went to, online programming. It was still really hard with the digital divide. So again, we had to pivot and, really figure out how do we create our virtual content so that as CPS opens back up with their blended approach, we don't leave those students behind, and we can create space where, yes, we still get to educate you and empower you on prevention of what dating violence looks like and sexual violence as a young person, because that is incredibly high rates. So we have to pivot and rethink our process. We've been, we do response to over 20 hospitals 24/7. So someone presents an ER with sexual assault or domestic violence, hospital dispatches us, we're there on scene. To this date, we can only get into one, we go to 5 major hospital systems, but because of COVID, we just now got back in a couple of weeks ago to one hospital system.
Wow.
And I'm really concerned, our county is on red alert. So... And so is Butler County. So when I say our county, Hamilton County, Butler County are still on red alert. When are we going to get back into the hospitals? When is it safe? Are we going to get shut out again? And I understand it from a pandemic. But I'm very concerned. Survivors have told us, I know I just got raped. that I'm going to have to deal with it alone and in my home and not go get medical treatment because I'm too scared to go to the hospital. And then if they are able to go to the hospital, unfortunately right now, many of those hospitals are not dispatching us to go partner and be, you know, we would typically spend 4 to 6 hours at a hospital with a survivor. It's an intensive process.
It's really jarring to hear, you know, just how connected you are to everything that has been so adversely impacted, not just, you know, the general economy that's kept all of us home, but from the schools, mm-hmm. businesses, and the hospitals. It's really something, but we're glad to hear that.
Our response with the police.
And the police, of course. And, you know, and there's that other thing happening in the country right now as well, alongside the pandemic right. with the civil unrest. Kristen, we do appreciate the time that you gave us.
Thank you so much.
Kristen Shrimplin is the president and CEO of Women Helping Women. I hope we can talk again soon.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity. Take care.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Marks.